And someone who heard it went, wait a second, is that like the dirty that was up in Scottsdale? And it's like, no, it's not. it's not that kind of blog. But clear that up for us, Louis. What are you about? Yeah. Or what are you about over there on Twitter?
So first off, it is tongue in cheek. I am not calling Tucson dirty, but we do have a lot of people who come from out of town for college, and the slang term for Tucson is the dirty T. If you've ever lived any time or spent any time in Phoenix or have friends up there, you'll hear it quite a bit.
It's true.
Around town. And so it's kind of the same way that Dallas would call Austin weird, and then Austin picked up the whole keep Austin weird marketing train. So I thought, hey, I love Tucson. I love a lot of the reasons why Phoenicians don't like Tucson. And so I wanted to...
So Louis's owning it.
Take that and run. Yeah, exactly. Well, we should. We should own it. We should change some stuff, obviously, but that's really the point of it, is showing Tucson some tough love, because I think there's a lot of people out there that show it blind love, that they love it no matter what happens, and they just, you know, you say, hey, we have a really high crime problem here, and they, like, plug their ears and, you know, sing a Glen Campbell song to you. So we got to fix some stuff, too.
You know, it's funny, a friend of mine who kind of got his career started in Tucson, he since moved away, not because of Tucson, just where his career took him, used the word a few years ago with me, gritty. And I really like, you know, there's Keep Tucson Crappy. It's not really that, but I can't say the real thing on the air. Or, you know, or up in Phoenix, it's the dirty tea, and it's kind of endearing. I like the idea of grit. I think Tucson is a gritty city, both in terms of its kind of a character value, but then also just the appearance of it. It's pretty gritty, and I don't mind owning that. I think it's I think it's part of our brand.
Yeah, I'm fine with that as well. I will put a little bit of a challenge out there.
Okay,
is that of all the people I've ever talked to, of why they love Tucson, and I know you have your list, and I have my list, and everyone has their list. No one ever mentions how just stunning the weeds along the side of the road are. I've never heard that. No one's been like, man, I really just love how unfinished our city is, and all the cracks and the potholes, and how weeded the areas around Prince are and all that. So I do love the grit, but that doesn't mean we should just accept things that should be fixed.
Right.
That makes sense. So yes, let's be gritty, but let's be a more polished, controlled version of grit, as opposed to just, it's kind of getting out of hand grit.
So I like that. I'm in for that. So the idea of your Twitter blog, and I think you and I have kind of agreed that's a good way to explain it.
Yeah.
It has its own Twitter feed, and you post quite a bit to that. What's the handle in case anybody wants to follow it?
So hop on Twitter, search the dirty T, just the letter T, C O. The Dirty T Co. will pull that up. You'll see I post a lot of polls. As much as I like sharing my opinion here, sometimes over text and over Twitter, opinions don't come out very well. So if I can post polls and just ask questions and kind of see what the city has, you know, has on their minds, I really love seeing that. And I've been corrected most of the time. So like, you know, I'm like, oh, I thought that poll was going to go a different direction, which is great.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, hop on there, do some searches, answer some polls. I have one right up. I just posted a couple minutes ago. The question is, do you think Tucson is a business-friendly city? I'm really curious to see what people have to think about that.
Yeah, and I'd be curious. I've asked that on the air as well, because I would be curious to get a poll of, say, now versus 2011, a really genuine poll, not just a perception poll. You know, because I know Mayor Rothschild came in 2011, and one of his goals was to really streamline the permitting regulation, kind of business setup process. And I'm curious to hear if that's improved. And so the point of your Twitter blog, let's say, is tough love, is a real care and a love for the city, but also not turning a blind eye to some of the opportunities that we, and some of the challenges that we have to overcome. So with that in mind, what are some things that are on your mind recently?
Yeah, well, I mean, a big part of it is that business-friendly aspect, I think. To actually kind of back up what you just said, 2011, Rothschild comes on. In 2012, Thumbtack.com came out with a poll that, or a survey, if you will, that showed that Tucson failed in 5 out of 10 business-friendly metrics. Zoning, licensing, regulations, tax code, ease of startups, and overall friendliness. We got a C minus in training and a D in regulations, employment, and labor and hiring. So if people are thinking, oh, we're fine, we're not that bad, yeah, we have some work to do. Rothschild has done a really great job of kind of changing the conversation, but we still have something to definitely fix there, because I think a lot of people think of small businesses as just restaurants, and we are a very restaurant-friendly city. Like, if you want to open any shop, you're going to get the newspaper writing about you, Tucson Foodie will come out, everyone will be super excited, but restaurants need people to come in and spend money, and that's where I think we keep failing. That's why we see a lot of turnover in some of our small restaurants in some of our areas, even in downtown right now. So that's one thing that's definitely on my mind. Another big one that I've seen just talking, and this is just in my life, maybe I'm the only one really seeing this, is I have a lot of friends with families who are new to Tucson who have decided to move to Marana, to Vail, to the outskirts of Oro Valley. And I'm trying to figure out the exact reason why, but the reason they always give me, their number one reason, is education. They can have better schools out there, so they'll do that. All of them, as soon as they say, hey, we're going to go out to dinner, and they ask my wife and I out to dinner or something like that, it's always in downtown. It's always somewhere in Midtown. It's not out there. They know that this is the place to come and have that, what we think of as that millennial experience. The only thing millennials care about, obviously, Zach, is craft beer and the food. we don't want salaries and jobs, God forbid. We just want avocado toast. So if that narrative of millennials only care about the restaurant scene is true, Tucson's killing it, because it's we're out there. We have a really good restaurant scene. But all of our families live in far-flung suburbs. And that obviously adds to the commute issues, to the infrastructure issues, to the road.
Right.
You have people, when all of your people who work live really far out, you're going to have really full streets, especially when we only have, surface level streets. If you live on the east side of town,
right,
trying to drive all the way across.
So, Louis, I want to get into this a little bit, and it's kind of a sensitive topic, and I intend to get into it in a sensitive way, because this deals with people's choices and families' choices, and I think families have the right to choose where they want to be and what part of town they 100%. Want to be, and so there's no personal criticism. I'm looking at things from a macro level. I'm fascinated by, and I want you to speak to this when I finish winding my way through it, if you can be patient mm-hmm. with me.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated when I read articles in The Star, right, the opinion pieces, this about the streets in the city of Tucson just bothers me, right? They write it as very intelligent op-ed, and it's a good critique. And then when they sign off at the end, it's Saddlebrook or Catalina Foothills. Or I'll talk to people who are really smart about the city of Tucson, understand how it works, understand what could be improved, have clear ideas of how to be a part of positive change in some really key areas. And to your point, when they go home, they go home to Vail, they go home to Marana, and they go home to Oro Valley. And I've been wrestling with this, and I've actually had some really good conversation with some close friends where we can have this conversation in the right way. And to your point, a lot of it is education-driven. My anecdotes back up your anecdotes, Louis. But I wonder, from a macro system level, when it comes to City of Tucson votes for infrastructure, City of Tucson votes for roads, participation in TUSD, when it comes to buying goods and services in the city of Tucson, we're benefiting from a regional perspective, right? Because we're a metropolitan statistical area.
Absolutely.
Blah, blah, blah. But from a city of Tucson level, those are tax dollars that aren't hanging around as much. That's infrastructure that isn't being voted on. That's elections that aren't being participated in. And I just know a ton of smart, invested people in our overall community who have made strategic choices not to live in the city of Tucson. And I get it. But I'm wondering what the tipping point is to get some of those voices in action in the city of Tucson. Where's the disconnect in your mind, Louis Christensen?
So that's a big question. If we could answer it, we wouldn't be talking to each other. We'd be fixing things. but I think one of the biggest issues is, I mean, for you, I know you're a family man. I'm heading that direction to you with a kid on the way. My number one priority has shifted to what's best for my kid. And that's it. And it's my kid alone. And it always comes across as selfish, but really everyone either votes for their family or for their pocketbook or for their own life. That's why they're doing it. So everyone who's moving outside of the areas where you can vote into areas that maybe should be included as a ward, that's a way bigger topic, they've cast their vote. They've said, I don't care because you don't care about me, so I'm going to take me and my family somewhere where I can control it, where I can have the life that I want for my kids. And that's their vote. And it's sad that that's happened here, but it's probably not abnormal across the country. Now, one of the things that we definitely need to ask ourselves is, are we the type of city that's going to keep attracting those people? Because if we are going to continue to grow and continue to have an economic system that pulls in more jobs, as you said, we have like 1.7, right? 1.9 job growth. If we keep drawing these people in and they keep living outside of the city, is Tucson really benefiting from that? Or are we just starting to create more problems further down the road as far as infrastructure and all that's concerned? Obviously, it'd be much better if your working class lives closer to their offices. And if we can start working on that, if we can start making neighborhoods more appealing to those families, the very first thing we need to do is fix our school system. TUSD is pushing people away. That's what I'm hearing. TUSD is the reason people don't live inside of TUSD. These are families that can't afford private school, but they can definitely afford to spend an extra whatever K on their house to live in Oro Valley, Marana, and Vail to put their kids into a good school system.
You know, I was talking to someone the other day about how, you know, even open enrollment within the public school system has really shifted people away from their communities, even in terms of education. It's an interesting point, I think, where, you know, before open enrollment, really things were neighborhood school, is what I've heard, neighborhood school driven, where when you grew up in a community, you knew what elementary, what middle, and what high school you were going to. And so, you know, school choice and charter schools and private schools, even aside, with open enrollment in the public school system, that has provided people more opportunities to either make decisions that take them further and further away from their place of residence. And there's a pro and con there. But again, this is touchy, Louis, because
it is,
because we're talking about people's personal choice and also community benefit. And sometimes those things don't quite align. but this is why I've said, I know this is not a popular opinion and it may not even be short-term math driven. I think it is long-term, but I think before we have conversations of annexation and incorporation and what that means for our public services, I think we've got a lot of work to do within our current city limits to make it a place where people want to come and stay. And I think we've got to figure that out first, clearly, before anything after. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's my editorial opinion.
Yeah, and I agree. Like you said, like choice is important especially when it comes to families. You know, telling someone, oh, you're anti Tucson for living in Marana, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, you know, hey, they've decided the life that they want to lead for their family, and they have, like I said, cast their vote, and their vote is, I'm not going to be voting because I'm living in those areas. But yeah, I think there's a lot that Tucson can do. We are a sprawl town, and that sprawl carried the metro lines pretty darn far. So there's a lot of growth that can happen, and I don't want people to hear growth and just think vertically, but just the health of our neighborhoods. If you look across town, you see a lot of those small, you know, 1950s, 1960s houses. Those were built a lot by families and working class people. And that's slightly changed. It's shifted. The age has obviously crawled up quite a bit in a few neighborhoods. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. But when our people who are commuting back and forth and doing their daily lives, you know, living in Marana, living in Oro Valley, but coming downtown for entertainment, and we're asking ourselves, well, heck, why are the roads so busy? That's one of the big reasons, is people have to travel so far to feel like they live in a good neighborhood where they feel safe, secure, and supported, and then can also, you know, entertain themselves in Tucson in those areas. So kind of like we said, there's areas of town that haven't really boomed the way that downtown has. And so maybe if we pull entertainment a little bit closer to those outside areas, maybe we can start seeing better commute times as opposed to worse.
So we're getting into a lot of themes, Louis. I think this is a good place to spin away to visit a few of our sponsors. But when we come back, let's dive into that topic. And that is, we talk a lot about downtown, but I think everybody agrees, both pro-downtowners and anti-downtowners, that I can't just be all about or stop in downtown. And you have some pretty strong opinions on areas and parts of town that maybe we should be talking more about, at least in the mainstream local media. Let's get into that on the other side of the break, if that sounds
absolutely
good. Louis Christensen, curator of the Dirty Tea Twitter blog, a feed that offers love but tough love to Tucson and talks about key topics of importance. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back to continue the conversation. Tucson, welcome back to the show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You bring trust and local listening. We do our best to bring high quality news and talk your way every day, and that's a partnership worth having. And that partnership is helped by our great sponsors. One of them on my show is Summers Financial Management. They've been building clients' wealth for over 20 years. As an independent fee-only fiduciary, which means they always act in their clients' best interest and excel at tax-efficient financial planning. They manage over $55 million of assets and have offices in Oregon and Arizona and are the creators of sustainable income portfolios, 6 low-cost diversified ETF portfolios with yields ranging from 4 to 8% that help provide passive income to anyone at any age. I love when I've gotten to sit down with Adam Summers, the principal over there. He can work with you whether you have a lot of wealth build up that you want to manage, or you want to get yourself on a financial management plan, whether you are in your 40s, your 60s, your 80s, or you are a millennial in your 20s or 30s. He has a plan for you, and he gets there by spending an hour of his time before anything begins, having a cup of coffee with you, and just to see if you guys are compatible. So it's a no strings attached first intro to see if Summers Financial Management can help you out over at summersfinancial.com. That's S-O-M-M-E-R-S financial.com. Back to my conversation with Louis Christensen on the line. You know, I had Heath Vescovi-Chiordi on the other day, Louis. He's an economic development specialist at the city of, or at the town of Marana, rather. And he has been tasked with the development of Marana's downtown. It's been a few year project, starting to pick up some speed. And we were talking about how a bedroom community like Marana that used to be is now a place where it kind of, you can kind of one-stop shop almost. You can have some of that entertainment and connectivity there. And I think over time that might have an impact on what's always been, well, if you live in Marana or Valley or, you know, far, far east side or Vail, you'll come into downtown for your entertainment. That might be shifting. What does that mean for Tucson and some of these kind of exurb areas that I know you have a lot of thoughts about?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, I lived up in Phoenix for 4 years and watching Gilbert, which, I mean, you would have been laughed at thinking that a young person was living in Gilbert. Their downtown went from, you know, a couple of restaurants to all of a sudden, like, Sam Fox moved in and Postino's and a bunch of other big names and created a really cool space and created a nice farmer's market community out there as well. And now it's a place where people will drive down to out of Scottsdale and out of Phoenix and Tempe. So I don't see anything wrong with Marana going after it. I mean, especially if there's other areas in town in Tucson that aren't taking advantage of the people that are living here. Yes, like, compete, like, step up, let's go, like, let's see what you got. I just hope that they're building that infrastructure out there, and in Oro Valley for that matter, to help support that in the long run, for sure. But yeah, let's see what Marana's got, and hopefully the county will let them do it. Nudge, nudge.
So what are some areas around town that you think might be areas where we can focus on besides downtown that are on your mind, and why? You have an interesting reason that you've written some articles in the Daily Star. Give us a little bit of a review of those as we talk about some areas of town to consider besides downtown.
Yeah, so right out of the gate, and this kind of lines up with what the city is actually hoping to do as well, if you look at their maps. Rio Nuevo, a lot of people don't know this because really all that's happening so far is just downtown. That district, where they can get incentives to come in, be it large or small, that stretches all the way down to Park Place. That's past Craycroft all the way to Wilmot. So when looking at where Tucson can grow, that's where the city has said, hey, this is where we want to grow. We see that with Sunshine Mile coming down the pike pretty soon, and hopefully we can see that kind of get built up as well. There's a lot of places that, I mean, really, really cool old buildings that should be getting redone before they're demoed. All the way down there at Craycroft and Broadway is another area that's got, you know, it's got some good infrastructure there already. And that could entertain a lot of the, you know, the Vail community, the Eastside community, that may not be coming to downtown because it's just too far of a drive, parking's too crazy, or whatever it may be, whatever the excuse is. If we can start building other areas up, that'll take some pressure off of the gentrification conversation with downtown as well, where just because you open a new restaurant doesn't mean you have to open it in downtown Tucson. That's going to help out a lot of other people. That's going to help out employees. That's going to help out employers. Especially with, I think Texas Instruments is about to open up their new office on that side of town as well, too. So let's start stretching it out. Let's not just give downtown love. There's a lot of other areas that are ready to take on that entertainment aspect.
Very interesting. Without the sprawl effect as well.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, Chroma, the Chroma Tower is a really great example for Speedway and Country Club. I think that's going to be in the next couple of years. I just saw Lloyd Construction tweet about it not too long ago, about, I think it's 5 or 6 stories tall. It's a mixed use residential, retail, restaurants, and, rented condos, purchased condos, and all that. That's 6 stories tall right there in the heart of Tucson. That'll spread. But what that does is that helps. I mean, the Loft is right across the street. You have the Whole Foods Market and all that market right there. There's a lot of just empty area that could be used in a better way, as opposed to forcing it into downtown just because that's where it's always been. I always get a little chuckle when I say this, but Speedway used to be the ugliest road in the United States. That is a fantastic marketing opportunity for Tucson to reclaim Speedway. Some really cool buildings down there, and it's already spun off Feast, a really fantastic restaurant. Now Tito and Pep is in that space. Some really cool stuff down that stretch as well. And obviously, it's a thoroughfare. It's already got a decent, infrastructure there. That's another area that has a lot of growth potential. And again, that's not sprawl. That's pulling people more, closer and closer in.
You know, with the cost of construction, which doesn't get enough airtime, I don't think, and the cost of some of these things that you're talking about, I think in large part why a lot of it centers around downtown is because of some of the, you know, whether it's the Rio Nuevo TIF district, or whether it's the GPLET, or other things that make it a little bit easier for developers to get into the downtown area and to be incentivized to be there. I think that plays a huge part. Do you have any ideas on how that might apply to an area like you're talking about that's not within, say, the TIF district, but there might be, you know, what might be some of the incentives, I don't just mean financially, for development to happen there?
The biggest one is zoning, and getting people on board with the idea of having new structures coming into their neighborhoods. Obviously, you know, if you lived in your house, no matter if you're pro-growth or anti-growth, all of a sudden you hear that your Mountain View is getting blocked by a six-story tall building, you're probably not going to be happy. But realistically, you know, the pros and cons of that are, I think, are going to outweigh it a little bit. And we can be smart about it. I think if neighborhoods come together and ask for good things as opposed to just saying no right out of the gate, I think conversations will go a lot further. I mean, developers want to build things that work for their community. That's one of the reasons why La Encantada has been doing so well, is just because it fit right in. You know, if you tried to build the Mercado Annex on that plot instead and flip them, we'd be looking at a different situation. So as long as neighborhoods are communicating with developers and saying, okay, if you're going to do this, let's do it this way, I think Tucson's going to go a heck of a lot further than saying no, 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 until those Tucson developers sell to California developers who then build Popeyes.
So that's a very real concern, and I mean, there's so many things that you just mentioned that we probably should get into and probably don't have the time to get into, but that has been a concern as well, and I'm always sensitive to the, you know, if you have a talking point, it can sometimes become a canard, but this has been a huge concern of mine is that one of the ways that communities can maintain culture and community and appropriate design is to actually appropriately embrace, you know, not all in, no questions asked all the time, but to come around local developers who understand the community, because the alternative is often somebody or a group that doesn't understand the community. You know, in our neighborhood, I would much rather work with someone that I know I have a chance of coming up to a great compromise with, and someone who won't ever talk to me and I'll just see it built before I have any chance of input. And so no at all costs often has a cost to it. And I've often thought of that as well. Really, really interesting stuff there. One question before we go to another break. Are you still able to go through the rest of the hour with us, or do you have to jump off?
I'm up to the top. We're good.
Okay, super. Let me ask you this question before we go to a break, and then we'll end by talking about young professionals and young talent in Tucson and how do we avoid losing them to other cities. But let me ask this question first. Around the things that we're talking about, you get to kind of microscope into cities around the country. What are some examples of ways that other communities are kind of tackling the future of their city, like we're talking about here with Tucson? What are some best practices you've seen? What are some cool ideas you've seen? Again, you really have an opportunity to look into other communities in a way that many of us just don't get to on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are a lot of cities that are doing a really good job of maintaining their local culture while growing. Tampa Bay is a really good example of that, where they have a really strong district's presence. So it's kind of like what we think of neighborhoods here, but in large swaths. So, you know, they obviously have their little tiny neighborhoods, like your Barrio versus Barrio Viejo versus, you know, Barrio Hollywood. That on a district's map would just be called the Barrio. And the tourism, the Department of Tourism markets that, and they really show that off. It's like a necessity. When I was talking with them, like, we need to have a district's map. We need to show that off. And talking about the strengths and the differences between each district. And I think Tucson is a prime example for that. We should not be all things to all people, because then your message just gets diluted, right? Then you just sound like an infomercial, like, but wait, there's more. But we have areas of town that can entertain different types of people. We should be marketing that and using that as a strength. Barrio is not a place where you should be going for, your, you know, super yuppity, you know, cat foot restaurants, right? I don't want to buy a $50 steak in the barrio. I want to buy really killer tacos and amazing, like, you know, cultural cuisine and have those walkability experiences like at the Mercado. That fits. And so if we can just be honest with ourselves about what type of different things different neighborhoods provide and come behind that and strengthen that and grow that, that's how we see neighborhoods and cultural stuff get on board with the growth in our city.
Very interesting. And this is my conversation with Louis Christensen, the curator of the Twitter blog, The Dirty Tea Company, a tough love, emphasis on love, but tough love, look at the city that he loves and had to leave and was able to come back to. That's a key part of your story. You grew up here, had to take your first entry-level job or jobs up in Phoenix, and were recently, within the last year and a half, were able to return to Tucson. I think that's a key part of your story that, in my mind, provides a lot of perspective into how you think and what's on your mind. How have you seen the local communities in those places buy into the view of their community that is being marketed to tourists? You know, for example, you know, I can see different parts of our Tucson community kind of bucking that desire to you know, monolithically say this area is the barrio. I mean, that's clearly not for the people who live there, right? It's for for a broader marketing. How have you seen that being balanced in some of the communities you're talking about?
I think the communities that can see the benefit in doing that are the absolute best. I was surprised, like really like shocked when I went to Louisville and talked to people about, okay, so Derby Day, do you guys like Derby Day here? Every single person inside the industry and outside of the tourism industry are like, oh yeah, it's awesome, it's fantastic. I mean, the hotels are filled and yada, yada. And it strengthens their whole entire community. They make money off of the Derby like nobody's business, and that keeps businesses open. So as much as we want to try and keep, you know, tourists out of our favorite places, the business owners probably don't. They probably want to sell that $20 plate, you know, that little item, the little tourism item or whatever it is. If you can see the benefit in that and come alongside it and embrace it and really show it off, I think that's really strong. We actually just had someone here at the company I work for just moved here about last week. And the very first thing he said when you asked him actually on your show, what do you love about Tucson? He says, people are just so friendly and like they give me restaurant recommendations and all that. We should be a city that does that. We should be a city that when we see someone with a Wisconsin hat or a Michigan sweatshirt wandering around aimlessly, we should be like, hey, what are you looking for? Oh, yeah, no, don't go there. Go here instead. This is much better. Like, that's where you get the real local taste. I would love for us to become that because the big city up north, they don't have that same character quality when I talk to people.
Gotcha. Louis Christensen, this wraps up part two of our three-part interview as we head to a break. We've talked about family flight. we've talked about how we view our city as a community versus just downtown. We've talked about some new areas of town that we can get excited about. We've talked a little bit about how we grow, sprawl, growth, infill. We've hit on all these themes, at least in a small way. We're going to wrap up when we come back by talking about young talent in Tucson, and how are we gaining or how are we losing them to other cities? I'm really excited for this one. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Come on right back. Tucson, welcome back to the last part of our first day here of the week together on Monday. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and on the show, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And that's why I'm thrilled to have teamed up with Vantage West Credit Union as the host of this show to spotlight purpose-driven organizations that are helping Southern Arizona thrive. The Vantage West Thrive interview series are 3 to 5 minute conversations between me and business leaders from diverse community organizations. We discuss the ins and the outs of what it takes to run a successful business in Tucson and how being community-minded has helped them to be more competitive. For example, I recently was with Nicole from Hotel McCoy, and they are providing travel for everyone and creating an incredibly localized experience, really inventing the future by exploring and investing in the past. Amazing place for either a staycation if you're in Tucson, or if you're visiting, a place to stay, kind of a 50s style motel experience, reinvented for the modern day. You can go and watch the latest episode, that one, by going to vantagewest.org/ThriveAZ. ThriveAZ. Thanks, Vantage West Credit Union, for your commitment to help our community thrive. I really enjoy working with you guys, and be sure to keep an eye out for a bunch of new episodes here through the end of the year. I have a lot of good things cooking, so thanks for that opportunity. Thoroughly enjoy it. Back to Louis Christensen here on our live line, calling in that way today as a guest of our show. We've talked about a lot of content here in this hour. If you missed hour one, we talked about what really was behind Amazon HQ2's decision to locate in Northern Virginia and why it isn't what everybody thinks it is. We also talked about how 15 million entry-level jobs worked in by those 34 and under are likely to be displaced by 2030. What does that mean for Tucson? We got into that as well in hour one. Check out kvoy.com/podcasts or go to iTunes or Google Play Music to hear that full replay. So, Louis, we wanted to finish up. We've talked about a lot of Tucson topics. We've talked Tucson today, as we promised we would. Tell me what you're seeing as a young professional about young professionals in Tucson. You and I, in different ways, have our pulse on this topic. Are we bringing them here? Are we keeping them here? Are we losing them? What's your pulse on this in Tucson right now?
Well, I mean, the numbers show that we, on a whole, are losing them, and we're not keeping them. We do have a brain drain issue here, where we have this amazing college that we're all really, really proud of, University of Arizona, and as soon as we spend all that time and community effort on getting them educated, we send them to different places. I think that's kind of sad that we continue to do that, because unlike a lot of other college towns, quote unquote, we're not a college town. We're college centric, but we have almost 1 million people here now. That's not Flagstaff. You know, there's a big difference. I think I used the analogy before of like, that's like you talking to your wife saying, hey, I'm just going to bring home a dog, maybe like a little Shih Tzu. Or a corgi, and instead you bring home two Great Danes. That's the difference between Flagstaff and Tucson, a corgi to two Great Danes standing side by side. So we are a big town, which means that we shouldn't just be relying on our university to employ people. It should be an employee creator. And so we need to really start focusing on what can we do to not only keep University of Arizona graduates here, but pulling people who went out of state for college back, becoming the city that families can, again, move back to. Obviously, I got lucky and I was able to move back down, but that shouldn't be a sentence ever coming out of a young professional's mouth. I got lucky to live in a city, not because of money, but because of the employment opportunities down here. I overheard someone just the other day saying, well, I'm trying to find a job for my boyfriend, but, you know, Tucson doesn't have a lot of jobs. That's sad. I don't know if that person owns a house or not, but if they didn't, I can guarantee you they might be looking into other cities like Denver, Phoenix, San Diego, wherever it might be. So we need to fix that, because we're losing families. We are losing young professionals who are going to go start families somewhere else. And those people love Tucson. They would love to be back here, but they just can't, because they can't take the cost of that employment status, of taking a lesser job just to live in Tucson.
Right. You know, it's an interesting point, Louis, that you bring up. And we knew this was going to be a rolling conversation that would kind of go where it might be taken. So I was referencing this research that came out of McKinsey this month that talks about how different kinds of communities will manage automation and job change. And they would consider, according to their map, Tucson as a niche city. Mm-hmm. And by niche city, they have three subcategories within that. We would be a college-centric town.
Sure.
And the examples that they bring up of a college-centric town are Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and mm-hmm. South Bend, Indiana, of Notre Dame fame.
Sure.
But it's interesting, this is to your point, Chapel Hill's population is 57,233 people, right?
That's South Tucson, right? That's just South Tucson.
Yeah. South Bend is about 130,000 people.
Right.
Tucson's city limits, if we don't even count the metro, is about 550,000 people.
Right.
So we would fall in, by a lot of categories, into that niche college center town. But to your point, we're not of that size. There's this tension between often what we are and how we act and who we actually need to be. Is that what you're speaking to, Louis Christensen,
exactly.
curator of the Dirty Tea Company Twitter blog, a tough love, emphasis on love, look at Tucson. Is that what you're seeing?
Exactly. I love the University of Arizona. I am a graduate of the University of Arizona. Some of my first memories are in McHale Center. I don't even remember my first basketball game because it was just like I came into being a U of A fan. But it should not be the only show in town. It shouldn't. That's a detriment to the rest of the city because they don't offer enough jobs to support Tucson. If they're more like a South Bend, then that's fine. Sure, let's be a college-centric town if you have the jobs to support the percentage of people. But that's just not the case. They don't offer enough jobs to support Tucson. Fortunately, we have places like Raytheon and Davis-Monthan that can employ more people and some health centers as well and employ even more people. But that's a big issue, as we're really relying on that kind of talk to cover all the other discrepancies that we have. So just looking at, I think on Map Arizona dashboard, which if you guys haven't been to that site, it is amazing. They're not even a sponsor. Just go do it. In Tucson compared to just Phoenix, right up the road, right? Same climate, worse climate, really, if you're being honest, worse climate. The median citizen in Phoenix is getting paid $3,000 more than the median citizen in Tucson. Hmm. That's just the median. There's also issues with the higher end, right? I know people don't like talking about people making a lot of money all the time, but it's a good thing because it's really hard making money off of people who make less money than you when you're in the service industry. So we need some help on this side. The average on the higher end American, $98,000, and in Tucson it's $87,000. So if you're running a landscape office, you're getting less jobs in Tucson because people aren't paying for those landscaping jobs. So it's not just we need more high salary stuff to have more high salary stuff. It's the support industry pulling Caterpillar and 500 jobs here, engineering jobs, 300 engineering jobs here, another 100 over there. As much as it's just those people coming in, it's also the people that they're calling out to support for, the financial advisors. Those are really solid jobs straight out of college to snag a financial advisor job. Those are teachers, right? Those are teacher spouses getting jobs so they can support a teacher salary, which, you know, we pay a little bit less than your average city and state. So we can get better teachers in here if people can afford to be a teacher, if they can have that support as well, and so on and so forth. So we need to stop looking at job acquisition as just the one-to-one ratio. We got one job, so that's great on a one-unit scale. But the ripple effect, we pulled in Caterpillar, and they brought AccessCade. The number one reason that AccessCade said they moved to Tucson was not, oh, location or a climate or a cost of living. It was we wanted to be next to Caterpillar. So we need to look at that ripple effect that a strong job market brings in. That's what I got there.
What are some of the things besides jobs that you're either hearing or seeing or as a young professional? We talked about education, so we can probably also put that one to the side. Anything that we didn't talk about that is a quality of life issue, an infrastructure issue, anything that you're hearing in Tucson as something that young talent, young professionals, whatever you want to call them, are needing and wanting and maybe isn't quite here yet in Tucson that might pose a challenge to this conversation we're having?
I have a friend who grew up in Phoenix, came down here to Tucson to go to college, and then quickly ran back up to Phoenix. And when I talked to him, he said amenities is the one big thing that he feels like he can live in a better area and have better things going on around him in Phoenix than in Tucson. Granted, he can't go outside very much because it's going to be 113 degrees up there versus our 106, but still, it's enough of a reason for him to live up there versus down here. And a job that you can probably have down here. So on that side as well, I know we kind of joke about how millennials only want craft beer, but that kind of, that is in there. It's the, what kind of life am I getting for my money? That's why a lot of Californians are staying in California, because they add the value of being near a beach or being near whatever amenity that they have out there to the, well, I'm okay with living with three other people in a studio apartment because I'm close to X. So Tucson can start working on that, and we are. That's one of the great things about downtown. It's one of the great things about our you know, being so close to nature and all that. We can improve golf. Soelo is a really great addition to the Tucson golf scene. And just kind of that overall living. Like, yeah, sure, you might be able to make money somewhere, but what can you do with it? That's definitely a question that needs to be asked as well.
And in your mind, how are we doing on some of those things that we've always done well with our relatively low cost of living, our affordability, we may not have as many non-nature amenities as other places, but we have more natural amenities than most other places do. So I want to make sure that the tone of this is a love and appreciation for Tucson, but just a laser focus on some of the areas that we can work on the most. I want to make sure that's the tone of this conversation. What are some of the things that we've normally done well on this front? And then is the landscape shifting under our feet? In your mind, are things moving beyond our current narrative, and how do we keep up? Louis Christensen.
Sure. So I think we are doing really well of having the places where you can go and have those outdoor experiences, or even like the indoor experience. I think there's one coming to Park Place, actually, now that I think about it. But let's just take the Loop, for example. Obviously, we are super, super proud of the Loop, and it's fantastic, and it connects Catfoot and all that area and all sorts of parts of town to downtown via bicycling. But where we're falling a little bit short. So this is a great thing. It's a great asset to have. But the one thing that's just like, it's not there yet, and we just need it to kind of push over the edge, is there's not a lot on the Loop to do, right? There's St. Philip's Plaza, big break. There's nothing going south as far as places to stop and have that combined experience. And then we hit the Mercado in downtown. And same with the other direction. There's really nothing on the Loop in the other direction. So what we should be doing, here's the addition. We're killing it with the Loop. What is it, 136 unbreakable miles or something like that? Isn't it crazy big?
Yeah.
It's huge, right? Awesome. And we keep pushing it and pushing and pushing it. But when you get on the Loop, you're on the Loop. It's not an and conversation. We don't have the type of economy that can really support a period thing. We always need to be killing two birds with one stone. And that's a really big way to do it. Think of all the people who live on the Loop or live near the Loop who would love to hop on a bike and go stop at a couple of places within a reasonable distance where they're not like huffing and puffing and exercising as much as people should be doing that, and having those really awesome experiences where you get to see the beautiful mountains in Tucson and bike and not deal with road dangers and bothering people on the road, and you're able to go to a coffee shop or a little retail shop or a Mercado Annex closer to, you know, and in between. We need more of those nodes along our entertainment areas where we're already doing a really good job. So I love to see Pima County start changing some of the zoning along that Loop so we can start having some more of that support system plugged into it.
That's a great thought there. I love that. We've got about a minute and a half. Louis, what is one thing that is getting you really excited about Tucson right now? Where's your optimism for this city coming from?
I think the conversation about what growth looks like and what business communities look like has really changed. The city of Tucson posted something not too long ago when it was hot outside, a photo of a crane in downtown that said, not even the heat can stop development in Tucson. That is not something you would have heard like pre-2011, right? And Rothschild has a big part to do with that. He made the business idea and the growth and economic development idea a little bit more friendly. And so if we can continue doing that, if we can continue to work together between communities, developers, and the city to open areas up where it could be a net gain for the neighborhood as a whole, that's what I'm getting really excited about. I think we're trending in the right direction. So as long as whoever our next mayor is, because we're getting a new one, continues to do that, continue to make economic development look friendly, I think we're going to be on a really, really good trajectory.
Awesome. Louis, thank you so much for your time. You are the curator of a Twitter blog called The Dirty Tea, a friendly and a little bit tough love look at what makes Tucson awesome and where we get to go from here. I appreciate you calling in, spending an hour with us, and providing a lot of great insight into conversations that are happening at a citywide level. I appreciate you, man. Keep doing it, and we'll see you next month.
All right. Talk to you soon, man.
And that was Louis Christensen. If you missed any of that interview, head to kvoi.com/podcasts or go to iTunes or Google Play Music. Well, that wraps us up for today, but it doesn't wrap us up as far as live local radio goes here on 1030 The Voice. The Bill Buckmaster Show is right next to this show, right after the break. The first half of the hour will be a Monday face-off. Allison Jones, chair of the Pima County Democratic Party, visits with Bruce Ash. And then in the back half of the hour, Miriam Cruz with a scam alert. And CD2 Republican candidate Joe Morgan comes to the station. Great hour of radio with the Bill Buckmaster Show. See you tomorrow at 10 for more on this show. Have a great day. 1030 The Voice.